Welcome to Just a Minute.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country and around the world, and to welcome to the program four talented, exciting, clever, original performers who are going to show off their dexterity with words and literature and knowledge as they try and speak on a subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And they are seated on my left, Marcus Brigstocke and Sue Perkins, and seated on my right, Sheena Hancock and Paul Merton. Would you please welcome all four of them? Beside me sits Sarah Sharp, who's going to help me keep the score. She's going to blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Radio Theatre in the heart of Broadcasting House in the centre of London, W1. And we begin the show this week with Sue Perkins. Who better? Sue, would you try and talk on this subject? How I describe myself to an alien. 60 seconds, starting now.
Well, it all depends on the mode of communication. If I'm on the phone, I'd say I'm tall, slim, long, blonde hair, enormous hooters and incredibly easy to please. In real life, I'd say spectacles on my home planet mean that I am the queen of all I survey and hope I got away with it. I'm a faint believer in extraterrestrial life, although I've not prepared a welcome speech, seeing as there are far more people suitable to meet and greets when it comes to E.T. and his ilk. However, I have seen the Roswell alien, not up close and personal, but it has a distinct resemblance to my late grandmother, who was grey round the gills with an enormous and pendulous goiter.
Marcus Challenge.
Yes, a repetition of enormous.
You had enormous before.
Yes. Mm. The first was hooters, and the second... the second a goiter.
So, well, listen, Marcus. So, Marcus Brigstocke has got a correct challenge. He gets a point for that. He takes over the subject, and he has 17 seconds available to tell us something about how I describe myself to an alien, starting now.
The first thing I would want to make absolutely clear to an alien is that I am allergic to being probed. This having been a theme of alien visits over the years, various simpletons from planet Earth have been taken into the mothership and had things inserted to them in a terribly uncomfortable sounding
place. Sue, challenge.
I was in a reverie then. It was almost a sort of panicked reflex at the idea of being taken to the mothership and having things inserted. I thought it was hesitation, but I think it...
No, darling, it wasn't.
No, I know.
But what happens, Marcus, is you have an incorrect challenge and you have another point and you have 1 second available now.
Really?
Yes. How I describe myself to an alien, starting now.
GSOH, non-smoker.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Marcus Brigstocke, and he's the only one to have scored any points at all in that round. And Marcus, actually, the next subject has been created for you to start, you're going to carry on. And the subject is hobnobbing. 60 seconds, starting now.
Well, hobnobbing is not to be confused with hobbit nobbing, which is, of course, illegal in New Zealand, but... Hobnobbing over here is a form of chatter used by the aristocracy as they talk to each other about the sort of things they find important, like sending their money away, and when it comes back, it's bigger. They use the same approach with their children, of course. When the elite meet each other, they also like to discuss how much money they have.
Oh, yes. Sue, challenge.
Repetition of money.
There was too much money there.
Yes, of course.
Right, sir. Yes. Sue, a correct challenge. And 33 seconds are still available. You tell us something about hobnobbing, starting now.
Hobnobbing is used to describe socialising with biscuits, which I've done on many occasions when bored and lonely. Oh, the ribald jests I've had with a bourbon. I can't tell you. Sitting there on lonely, miserable days as I pick out something from a packet that's possibly sandwiched a custard cream, perhaps, and eulogising and waxing lyrical on themes that occur to me in the spur of the moment. The conversation is one-sided. That is no matter to me. For I find that I can talk pretty much endlessly to any kind of confection you could possibly wish. Romany cream. Thankfully...
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of cream.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Custard cream.
Yes.
So, Paul, you've cleverly got him with 1 second to go on. The show is so unfair. After all that hard work of Sue's, she's lost it.
And that's my life.
She hasn't lost it, she lost the subject. And Paul's got it. 1 second, Paul. Hobnobbing starting now.
Prince Charles said to me...
Paul was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's now in second place behind Marcus Brigstock. Sheena Hancock, we would like you to begin the next round. A vast, interesting subject, the avant-garde. Will you tell us something about the avant-garde in this game, starting now?
The avant-garde actually means the vanguard of any kind of art or music. It's a strange choice, really, because guard gives the impression that it's something that is to be protected. But in fact, the avant-garde opens doors, changes the world. Authors like Beckett, Genet, artists like Picasso, who now is considered one of the establishment, was in fact one of the avant-garde.
Paul Jones.
Unfortunately, repetition of one of.
In one of those, one yes. of those, yes, right. So, Paul, a correct challenge, 32 seconds. You tell us something about the avant-garde starting now.
In many ways, I think perhaps that Sheila was saying is the avant-garde can influence the mainstream and after a number of...
What happened then? What happened then?
Sheila Hancock challenged you.
I wasn't saying that at all.
Was you? Well, I was trying to put some flesh on it, you know.
So your challenge is?
Deviation.
Yes. So, Sheila, another correct challenge, a point to you, of course. The avant-garde, and there are 25 seconds starting now.
Haydn, in his time, was considered very avant-garde. Now John Gage.
Marcus, challenge.
Hiding is considered avant-garde.
It was in his
it's
time.
A game. It's a
in his
game.
Time, he was incredibly revolutionary.
I'm so sorry. You're talking about a person. I thought you
Haydn.
Meant Haydn.
No, Haydn. Not Haydn. What? And his double act partner's seat.
But what happens, Sheila, is you get another point for an incorrect challenge. So you keep the subject. 20 seconds are still available. The avant-garde starting now.
4:33 was what he wrote, which was silence. People sat there, and now perhaps that will become the norm. In film, there was Buñuel and Cocteau, and in writing...
Marcus.
Well, I wouldn't normally do repetition on a word like in, but it was repetition yeah. of that.
It
yes,
was.
It was.
He's
it was
remembering
heavy,
the last time we played
it. Emphasised,
yes.
dragged out,
yes.
in.
That's why I noticed it.
Yes. Yeah. Avant-garde is with you, Marcus. 2 seconds available, starting now.
When art is rubbish, it's usually...
So Marcus Brigstock was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's increased his lead. He's one ahead of Sheila Hancock, and he's 2 ahead of Paul Merton, and 4 ahead of Sue Perkins, if you're interested in the scores.
Well, they're not important, Nicholas, but it's lovely to hear them.
Right. Paul, would you begin the next round? My love of the absurd. It suits you very well with your surreal thoughts on occasions, but talk on that subject in 60 seconds, if you can, starting now.
I managed to indulge my love of the absurd. I'm currently directing a BB programme and... Oh.
Oh, that was a classic just a minute
ago. Yeah.
Oh. You knew you couldn't repeat B and you left out
I left
the C.
Anyway, I was being absurd.
You were, but within the... What was your challenge, Sue?
Repetition of B.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yep.
Yes, it wasn't absurd enough to gain the point. So, Sue Perkins, you have the subject, My Love of the Absurd, 54 seconds starting now.
I'm a fan of absurd drama. Authors like Simpson, Ionesco, the idea you could have a fairly staid set of dramatic principles and suddenly in the middle of the action, a rhinoceros would appear or a hole manifest itself into the ground. It's an extraordinary idea, absurdism.
Marcus, challenge.
Yeah, repetition of idea.
Yes, there were two ideas there. Mm. So, Marcus, you've got another point. You have 36 seconds. You have My Love of the Absurd starting now.
My Love of the Absurd. Well, I can tell you that she hates it when I call her that. But, nonetheless, my wife is an interesting woman and occasionally absurd when she tells me off for pointless I'm running out of words.
Sue Jones.
He was hesitating.
Yes, we call that hesitation. Sue, you got in with 23 seconds on this subject. My love of the absurd starting now.
Physical comedy is often predicated on the absurd. A man, woman walking across the street suddenly slips on a banana skin. Funnier, too, if it happens to be the pontiff or an established member of the aristocracy. It's that juxtaposition of two different scenarios. The high and mighty meeting something calamitous and yet incredibly banal. I'm a massive advocate of the idea you can fuse...
So Sue Perkins, with her command of language and words, kept going until the whistle went, gained that extra point, she's moved forward into second place alongside Sheila Hancock. And Sue, we would like you to begin the next round. And the subject, I don't know whether this is your scene or not, but it is the Aztecs.
Oh, yeah, that's my scene.
Is it?
Yeah. Right. It was massive something... in Croydon in the 1980s.
Tell us something about the Aztecs in this game. 60 seconds, starting now.
The Aztecs were an esoteric tribe in central Mexico.
Was there a hesitation there?
I heard it, definitely.
Yeah. It's okay.
Someone who's normally so fluent. You did actually put an er in your first sentence.
I did, indeed.
Yes, and,
I did.
And, Paul, you got in with 56 seconds on the Aztecs, starting now.
Montezuma, one of the finest Jewish tailors in Shepherd's Bush, was looking out of his window one day and suddenly saw the Aztecs come towards him. They had lost. They'd set out for Mexico, but gone via Peru and ended up somewhere near Fulham. It was outrageous. The Aztecs turned to him and said, "We invented chocolate, and yet Bourneville came along and paid us slave wages." That might be libelous. I'm not sure if it happened at all. It might not have done. And Mars, they were equally as bad. Round trees. Don't get me going on them.
Sue challenged.
Deviation. Mm. He said he wasn't quite sure that it happened or not. I think it's unlikely.
It was metaphysical.
Yeah.
Metaphorical.
So what is your challenge?
Deviation from the subject.
The whole thing was deviation. So I don't know what I do, really. I think what we'll do is, because technically I think you're correct, I'll give you a bonus point for the benefit of the doubt. And, Paul, because we loved what you were doing...
Yes, there might be much more of it.
And having gone into the surreal, yes, you're entitled to remain in the surreal.
Okay.
And you have 35 seconds starting now.
They were very big on pyramids. 15...
Sheila Hancock challenge.
I don't think they were.
Aztecs pyramids, yeah.
No. Aztecs weren't pyramids.
It's not the Egyptians.
Egyptians. I've never seen an advert for Aztec chocolate bar where this bloke walked up a pyramid. I know that's not really historical research, but... Did they not have pyramids, the Aztecs?
Yes.
No. They did have pyramids.
They did. They absolutely did. They think, before the pyramids in Egypt.
Yeah.
The Aztecs predated them with their triangular...
Are you sure?
Yeah. Well, Sheila, I wasn't there, but I'm as sure as I can be.
We need an eyewitness.
We need an eyewitness. Nicholas, did the Aztecs build pyramids? Before the Mexicans? Did they build pyramids for the Mexicans?
Well, not when I was there.
No.
They're up on that hill, aren't they? Don't you have to go up miles up to find them, the Aztec ruins?
No, I think you're maybe thinking of Machu Picchu, which...
You are thinking of Machu
Picchu. Maybe they did have pyramids, whoever they were.
They did have pyramids.
I don't go around claiming people have pyramids if they didn't. I've got better things to do in my
time.
I think as you were in the realms of the surreal,
yeah,
we will allow you to have again the benefit of the doubt and continue with the Aztecs with 32 seconds starting now.
32 seconds to talk about the Aztecs is not as bad as it seems, because now it's probably about 24.
Sue challenge.
It's probably about 27.
Well, what's your challenge?
Deviation from time as we know it, yeah, which...
Actually, that's incorrect, because his timing was correct. So I think you're going to continue on the Aztecs, Paul.
Yeah, great.
And 26 seconds starting now.
One of the finest experts on Aztec history lives just over the road from me at the University College of London. His name is a magnificent name. I was trying to avoid Professor.
Right, Sue. I think we know what the challenge was. Yes.
Yes.
So at last you've got in on the subject, Sue. 16 seconds. The Aztecs starting now.
The Aztecs love burritos, mariachi bands and human sacrifices. And we're doing rather nicely, thank you very much, until around the 1520s when I think the Spanish turned up. A conquistador gave them a blanket, which...
Marcus challenged.
I think it's conquistador.
It is conquistador.
Not conquistador.
I'm just a bit common.
No, right. I think that's deviation from the correct word or pronunciation.
Conquistador.
Conquistador.
Oh, when you pronounce it like that.
Marcus, benefit of the doubt. Subject because that is the correct pronunciation. The Aztecs with you. 5 seconds starting now.
Aztec speak takes over. I find it increasingly difficult to understand what young people are saying.
So Marcus Brigstocke was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's just ahead of Paul Merton, and he's just ahead of Sue Perkins, who's just ahead of Sheila Hancock in that order. And Marcus Brigstocke, we're back with you to begin, and the subject now is winter sports. From Aztecs to winter sports, what a range we cover in this show. 60 seconds starting now.
I love winter sports. For those of you not familiar, it mainly involves paying a phenomenal amount of money to be carried in a lift to the top of a mountain and then prevent yourself from dying on the way down. This is not easy to achieve, particularly because you have to attach levers to your feet, which is something the human body can barely withstand. However, I can promise you that hurtling down the side of a hill with spraying in your face, feeling like you're conquering nature, is entirely a mistake because you're almost certainly going to hit a tree or a rock, as Sonny Bono did and so many before him. But I find that being in that wonderful big blue sky with the cold wind rushing towards me and the feeling that I'm somehow dynamic and not a man crashing towards 40 fills me with joy and with a sense of power that I know I don't truly possess, and yet somehow with my feet strapped down like that I
Well, that was truly magnificent. You were
I'm
really
done, thank you.
Right. You were really reliving what you love so much. Marcus, you not only kept going until the whistle went and you gained an extra point for doing so, you get a bonus point for not being interrupted. You've got the points this time, and there you are, out in the lead, way ahead of the others. And Sheila Hancock, we'd like you to begin the next round. The subject, interesting, how to cope with a bore. 60 seconds starting now.
I'm not really equipped to answer this question, but I will, Paul, because I always get trapped in parties by the most boring people on earth. They tell me their life histories, and I'm much too kind to say, please go away, you're boring me to death. I read an obituary last week.
Marcus Challenge.
Yes, a repetition of boring. The word on the card is bore. Yeah.
So, Marcus, another point. Gosh, you are on song tonight, aren't you?
Yeah.
44 seconds available. How to cope with a bore, starting now.
I find the best way to cope with a bore is to buzz in and just stop them from speaking. However, I think that under the circumstances, making that...
Sue Challenge.
Deviation from the respect owed to Sheila Hancock.
I was just about to go on and say that that does not apply to the most recent buzz I just did.
So I don't think here's your champion now.
It's gone to my head, folks. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
I don't think you should have ever started on that line, actually.
I agree.
Yes. And the audience agreed
really
that
right.
I should take the subject away from you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, they've turned.
And give the benefit of the doubt to Sheila Hancock.
I didn't buzz.
I know you didn't, but you're going to get it because of what he said about you. How to cope with a bore, Sheila. And there are 34 seconds starting now.
This lady went to a very boring do, and she was...
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of boring.
God!
You used the word last time you were speaking on somebody. Yes.
Wake
Paul,
up,
we're with
Sheila.
You now on how to cope with a bore, and 31 seconds available starting now.
Grab hold of their tusks and flip them quickly over your head, and the animal will have no idea in which direction it's meant to be going. They can be quite vicious. Their habitat is the forests and woodlands of Kent and Sussex. And if you find yourself in those particular locales, and in you... I went into an Aztec saying.
Yeah.
The old Aztec saying, when you see a boar, we can go away.
Sue, you challenged.
Hesitation.
Yeah, yes, you did. Right. Sue, 14 seconds. How to cope with a bore, starting now.
I know how to cope with a bore because I am one at parties. I'm the person that comes up and endlessly discusses the weather or what to do about the current political situation. You won't be able to get away from me because I talk so quickly I very rarely pause for breath.
Perkins then speaking as the whistle wen gained that extra point, and she's now in second place alongside Paul Merton behind Marcus Brigstock. Paul, we'd like you to begin the next round. The subject is my garden shed. I don't know whether you have one,
no,
but you
I
could
don't know,
talk
one
on the subject of my garden shed starting now.
My garden shed is a magnificent structure. I built it last Christmas as I was looking to plant the chrysanthemums down by the lower paddock. And you know, there's an old country saying that says, people on the radio can't do the accent, shouldn't bother. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. Was it not Marie Antoinette who said one Christmas, oh, those spuds that I planted last August, will they never come up? What shall I give my guests? And the king said to her, you are an historical anachronism that's been fitted into a story for no purpose.
Sheila, you're challenged.
This is not about garden sheds, is it? It's gone way off the subject.
Well, I hadn't thought about it, but enjoying it so much.
Marie Antoinette was growing her stuff around the back of the garden shed. Well,
he got away from my garden shed. Mm. And that is true.
He wasn't even talking about sheds.
I know, but so you've got the correct
chance.
It's
a nice gaff, though, you've got. You've got a paddock and everything.
Yeah, lovely. It's indoors.
Sheila, correct challenge. A point and 25 seconds. My garden shed starting now.
My garden shed is used for little seedlings and growing things that I'm going to replant in the garden. I have pots and I have chairs.
And Paul challenge.
I haven't got a garden shed.
Yeah. Repetition of have.
I have. Yeah. I have, yes. Paul, we've got the subject back. You've got 14 seconds. My garden shed starting now.
I do have a garden shed, and like most garden sheds, it is made of wood. Good, solid pine. As I look at it, I can't help but feel that British craftsmanship is absolute British craftsmanship.
Sue challenge.
It's like stumbling, British craftsmanship.
Definitely.
It's like hesitative stumble.
He got the word out.
He got the word out.
No, he didn't. He stumbled.
You haven't even got a garden shed. I don't know what you're putting in. At least I've got a shed.
You haven't.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh. I saved up for it. And I'll have a garden one day to go with it. Just you see. Just you see.
Paul, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah? Right.
3 seconds. Tell us more about my garden shed, starting now.
The interior is beautiful, full of screws.
Marcus, you've challenged.
More deviation. He said it's a simple wooden structure made of pine. I mean, how beautiful could it be?
Oh, full of screws, washers, very neat. It all looks lovely.
Yeah, lovely.
I've got
it's
a
not beautiful, though, is it, Paul?
Hanging up just there.
What's that?
It's something used in metalwork. You look it up, it's not swearing, in metalwork it's called a bastard file.
What is it?
I mean,
it's a
you...
file that's a bastard.
Yeah. Actually, Marcus, if you have a garden shed and you love it, then things inside it do have a beauty to it for you.
You're saying the shed is in the eye of the beholder?
Yes.
So, benefit of the doubt, Paul. Oh, gosh, you've only got half a second.
Oh.
Right, my garden shed, Paul, starting now.
Tune it!
So Paul Merton was then speaking as the whistle wen gained that extra point, and I've just been told we are moving into the final round. And right, I'll give you the situation as we do. Sheila Hancock, who did so well last time these four were together, is trailing a little in fourth place. She's not very far behind Sue Perkins, who did so well last time these four were together. She's in second place. But in the lead, jointly, are Marcus Brigstock and Paul Merton. And Sue, it's your turn to begin. We'd like you to take this subject and begin on anything and everything. Quite bizarre. 60 seconds, starting now.
Bats always fly left out of a cave. It's impossible to cry in space. In World War I, the Germans banned the term Gesundheit for sneezers. Pope John Paul was given an honorary membership of the incredible baseball team, the Harlem Globetrotters. Scuba divers can never fart at a depth below 33 meters.
Paul, do tell me you're going to contest that last remark.
Well, I was going to say it's fun trying, but... anything and everything, of course, you can't deviate at all from that, can you? Because it's everything and everything, so there can't be any deviation.
I felt there was a bit of a deviation. There was a lot of anything, but I didn't feel we'd arrived at everything.
I was getting something. I was building towards everything.
You have the benefit of the doubt, Sue.
No.
Because I think you were keeping going on that subject without deviation, and there are 32 seconds available starting now.
Nothing, no word in the English language can rhyme with month. Oranges taste unpleasant to members of the Perkins family, to whom they are allergic. My grand...
Sheila Chalmers.
Okay, did you say nothing can rhyme with month? Month.
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 Wow.
Yes, in fairness, it's not strictly true that nothing can rhyme with month. My brother has a lisp and doesn't like the people he works with.
Welcome to BBC Radio 4.
Nicholas, Nicholas, whatever you do, don't explain it.
I think there is a word that rhymes with month.
What is it?
I don't know. Sue, you have the benefit of the doubt. You have the subject of anything and everything, and 21 seconds starting now.
Some gerbils are born pregnant. Fact, mine wasn't, although I did once have a hamster that had elephantitis of the testicles, and we used to use him as a parlour game. We would place him on the mat and watch him drag his enormous space hopper-like appendages around. It was like an ersatz circus that took place every day in our household, and how we laughed at the wee fella attempting to...
Anything and everything. Yeah, well, that's right. Anything and everything.
Yes,
it was very devious, but it was anything and everything. But Sue, you kept going till the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so. You have moved forward. So the lovely Sheila Hancock was in fourth place, but... but she trailed Sue Perkins, but Marcus Brigstock and Paul Merton were equal in first place. So another round of applause for our winners. Here remains... for me to say thank you to these four fine, intrepid players of the game. Paul Merton, Sheena Hancock, Sue Perkins and Marcus Brigstock. I thank Sarah Sharp, who's helped me with the score. She'd blown that whistle most delicately after the 60 seconds elapsed. We thank Talusha Gilani, who is our producer. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're grateful to this lovely audience here in the radio theatre who've cheered us on our way magnificently. From the audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and the team, goodbye. Tune in the next time we play Just a Minute.